You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Now we want to begin in downtown Portland. That's where these protests were relatively calm for a change overnight. That comes after weeks of clashes between demonstrators and federal officers. Here's what changed. There were no federal officers visible at all last night. About 100 Oregon State Troopers are now protecting the courthouse after the governor reached a deal with the White House on Wednesday. Throughout the night, there were some small fires, but people in the crowd put them out and they were urging each other to remain peaceful.
July 31st, 2020. That's a report today from KGW-TV in Portland, Oregon. And I'm glad they can report a night of peace. No one wants more violence. Well, most of us don't want another night of violence, and it was peaceful. There were some fires, as you heard, set, but then others would put them out. So they weren't all just First Amendment protesters standing around outside the courthouse. There were among them some of those rioters who came armed with various things and wanting to start fire and trouble, but the rest of them kept them at bay. Calm them down. Oregon State Police surrounding the courthouse. No federal agents seen outside. We're told federal agents were still inside, which it's a federal building. Why not? And, of course, the whole storyline, the narrative from the left, from the Portland mayor to the Oregon governor, both Democrats, is that by Trump sending federal agents to protect a federal courthouse, he sparked all of the violence. The violence and the attacks started on the courthouse before the additional federal agents were sent in. It became apparent the existing federal agents did not have enough manpower to hold the crowd back. And the Portland police were not helping, or they were too busy elsewhere. So now that they're gone, do you think everything will remain peaceful? Do you know how many other cities across the nation where we continue to have violence and so forth aimed at law enforcement in general, be they federal, state, or local? Well, I hope this can hold. I do. It would be better. And some of the Democrats have been acknowledging the more violence inside the streets, for whatever excuse you want, it's going to help Donald Trump in his reelection. So maybe they decide that we got to cool it. This is not going to help. I don't know, but let's be thankful. Because too many law enforcement agents are on the front line. There's another review of the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, Missouri. And that's a particular interest of Ferguson and St. Louis residents. We will get into that because, again, the review, the finding, even though the whole intent of putting a new prosecutor in place in St. Louis County was to overturn the acquittal of the police officer and find him guilty, that was the whole intent. They're not going to like the findings. We'll get into that. Fauci testifying today, and he's saying under testimony, President Trump's decision to ban flights from China and Europe saved lives, period. Also, Trump and Fauci coming together and agreeing that let's encourage COVID patients to offer plasma that might be a good use to help others who are suffering. What if I told you the NFL is banning players from attending church? They have not made a big noise about it, but I've got it here in front of me. We'll get into that. And, of course, you've heard about Trump talking about delaying the election. He can't do it. He just sent it up as a trial, just basically asked, do we need to because of all this going on? It's more rope-a-dope, and the mainstream media and the leftists bid on it hard. One of our listeners, Diane, sent me a note about absentee voting. She's in St. Francis County. The county clerk is Kevin Engler. She said they had staff outside the building in the parking lot assisting any voter who did not want to go inside. If you did go inside, they had it set up right away, so you got your voter registration card, photo ID. Folks were in and out in 5 minutes. That's good. Oh, by the way, if Joe Biden wins, the very first thing the left mob is going to do, if Joe Biden wins, I'll tell you the very first thing the left mob will do, Joe won't like it. And I've got to tell you, I got something in the mail last night. I got home, and there it is. A letter to me from Nancy Pelosi. I told you this radio program is making waves all the way to D.C. and back. I've got a letter from Nancy Pelosi. I'm going to open it on air later. I'm excited. This is like Christmas. I see the package under the tree. I know it's got to be, the box is too small for golf clubs, but I'm sure it is. This letter, I cannot wait to open. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Short, my hair was long, caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Good morning here from downtown Portland. It's about midnight here downtown. Two big differences that I want to point out. This crowd is a little bit smaller and things are just generally more peaceful. Also, we have seen zero law enforcement throughout the entire night, state or federal. Organizers of the Black Lives Matter movement say they really want to refocus this protest on Black Lives Matter and on eradicating racism, the causes that brought everybody out more than 2 months ago. As far as the feds' state troopers swap goes, a lot of them don't believe the feds have really left.
That's Maggie Vespar, again, a reporter from the Portland, Oregon TV station, KGW, and her report at midnight last night, peace and calm. And it continued that way throughout the early morning hours. Again, Oregon State Police going in and taking the position around the federal courthouse so federal agents didn't have to stand out there. Federal agents went in back inside and some probably left the area. And she pointed out something which is good in all respects, that even among the protesters, there were those who were saying, look, we just need to stop all of this rioting and get refocused on the George Floyd case and why we originally started. And as they point out, the basic premise of Black Lives Matter in the way it was originally thought, believed, conceived in many minds before it got hijacked, became political, and became a battering ram and an extortion weapon. But the bottom line is, a night of calm in Portland after 62 nights of violence. That's good. No one should be unhappy with that. I'm sure there will be some, both on the left and the right. They were looking for more action. They want more. Portland police and that reporter and others have stated that in some cases, a few of the folks tried to start fires or climb the fence at the federal courthouse. Other protesters would stop them. And I'm calling them protesters because they're not creating mayhem, chaos, anarchy, arson, and attacks on law enforcement. If they go back to First Amendment peaceful assembly, then they are protesters. And they have a guaranteed constitutional right. And apparently through the early morning hours, some were gathering outside the Justice Center, the federal courthouse, and just listening to speeches. That's fine. That is fine. I'm looking at some of the other reports that came out. The Oregon police, again, say they deployed 100 troops, logistics, and command staff, taking over the entire block. Now, they've got 100 troopers there. Statewide, the Oregon State Police has 380, so this means there might be some areas of Oregon that are even less protected than they were previously by the Oregon State Police. Now, Black Lives Matter activists, and I'm reading a quote from one of them saying, "This doesn't go away tomorrow. The problem that we face is black people. It's every day. So with having the feds here still, we say, or so we think, it's not an issue. It's not going to stop us. We're going to be here. We're still going to chant. We're still going to let them know that Black Lives Matter." I'm all for that. That's fine. That is, again, your guarantee First Amendment rights. But the whole issue that this rioting, the torching efforts to burn down the federal courthouse, attacking federal agents who were trying to hold the line, that was not First Amendment, no longer peaceful assembly. There's a new survey I don't want to share with you. And, of course, you got prominent Democrat leaders, everyone from Joe Biden to the Seattle mayor, Jenny Durkin, the Oregon governor, and the Portland mayor, all maintaining the protests have been pretty much peaceful. Well, they know better. They know better. They know that her protest in Seattle was not so peaceful because they had to break it up when we had shootings take place. And then when they showed up at the door of the Seattle mayor at her home, that wasn't peaceful either. So she ordered it all shut down and disbanded. There's a Harvard-Harris poll taken July 21st to the 23rd that's out, asking registered voters, do you think that those who are committing riots and looting should be prosecuted or not prosecuted? You got to stop it right there. What? Why would you think that's even a question mark? A question mark. Do you think those who are committing riots and looting, should they be prosecuted or not prosecuted? Well, I am glad to say an overwhelming majority, not 100%, but an overwhelming majority, 85% say, yeah, they should be prosecuted. And yet 15% indicating, no, I don't think so. If they're looting and rioting, 15% say, no, that's okay. They should not be prosecuted. You talk about a mind warp going on in this nation that the left continues to feed and fuel. Now, it does not break out in this survey that I've seen at the summary of it as to the ages, the gender, or political affiliation. And again, the survey also asked if those who are destroying public statues specifically, should they be prosecuted? Again, you think, is that has to be a question? But it's asked, more than three-fourths, 78% said yes. Now, that's less than the 85% as to prosecuting, rioting, and looting overall. If you're focusing on public statues, only 78% say yes, they should be prosecuted. And here's another point. 72% of those surveyed indicate the police should not be defunded. Yet 28% explicitly supported the idea of defunding the police. There'd been a recent Reuters survey that had similar responses that 63% were against defunding police. Now, many of them will say, I'd like to take some of the money from the police and give them for other groups and agencies that might be able to help inside the communities, you know, more social services and things. That would be a good idea. But you don't take it from police. You don't take it from fire and police, those and emergency medical technicians. You don't cut those areas unless you're really overlogged on any and every one of them, and you know where you're not. You take it from other areas. Maybe the street sweeper doesn't cover a street on a regular basis for where maybe if they're on a four-week schedule, maybe they make it a six-week schedule. I don't know. I don't have all the city budgets, but if thinking people in control of the city councils, the state governments, county councils, look at their budgets hard and say, we got to protect police, fire, and emergency resources. They have to be protected unless we're really overstaffed, and show me any police department that is not understaffed, then maybe that's where you start. New York Times, in addition to those surveys I just read, they ran what they call a fact check. Here it is. Fact check, how violent are the Portland protests? Again, what a stupid assumption question. Violence is violence. Now, Attorney General Bard said rioters, he called them protesters, I say rioters, use fireworks, tasers, pellet guns, and lasers to target federal officers. We know that. You could see the video night after night for 60-plus nights. And the New York Times running a fact check begins with the question, how violent are the protests? As if the underlying line, it's not that bad. Well, not that bad. And that's pretty much the way they started. You get deep into their copy after they quote a few things from Barr and talk about the nightly protest, and they call them protests, not riots. But when they're burning, attacking law enforcement, that's a riot. That's not a protest. Then they get down to, have protesters use violence against federal officers? Again, a stupid question. It's been documented. The video's been there. And I'm looking a little deeper into this. They're asking how many federal officers have been injured. Well, in a July 22 court filing, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Oregon on July 22nd said at that point, 28 federal officers had been injured. That was July 22nd. Don't have an update past that. And then the question, has there been violence used against protesters? And, of course, they quickly said there's not a comprehensive tally of the injured protesters. But at least five people have filed civil lawsuits describing injuries and seeking damages up to almost $1 million. Well, of course, would you expect anything other? And all the video also showing buildings being set on fire and, yes, police having to spray pepper spray, bottles of urine being thrown at police, spray cans spraying urine or bleach at police. Portland, or rather back in Seattle, they said they had 60 officers injured during that event. That was a, quote, summer love fest thing, remember? There is something else that got pointed out in this article. The crowds have been largely peaceful and have included high school students, military veterans, off-duty lawyers, and lines of mothers who call themselves the Wall of Moms. You remember I told you about that, the Wall of Moms. They showed up in yellow shirts, Wall of Moms. And in the beginning, when you first read about it, you think, well, that's probably a good idea. I mean, they're coming out here, and they're trying to stand the line between the rioters, not protesters, the rioters, and the federal agents guarding the courthouse in Portland. But then when you heard what the moms were saying, telling the federal agents to get out of here, to leave, well, then you get the idea they're not here to really serve as a peace offering and a way to stop the violence, because they're taking sides already. If they're really there to bring peace, they don't take sides on either, other than telling the protesters, rioters, stay back. But they didn't. But I love when the left begins to turn on itself and eat itself. It's like a snake eating its own tail. And Black Lives Matter activists are now accusing the Wall of Moms group who appeared at Portland. Listen up, please. Black Lives Matter activists accusing the Wall of Moms group of racism and of attempting to exploit ongoing demonstrations for the benefit of their own leadership. Can you believe it? The Portland Wall of Moms, a group formed in recent weeks, quickly recognized as a staple of the nightly downtown protest, as they wanted to say, now accused of, quote, anti-blackness by leaders of the existing black-led community group, BLM. Wall of Moms said, well, we were trying to support and protect other Black Lives Matter protesters. And then they had announced, by the way, the Wall of Moms, that the white leadership had rescinded their positions to allow women of color to be in charge. And then you had a Instagram urging people against supporting the Wall of Moms, saying from a Don't Shoot Portland group on Instagram, urging folks not support the Wall of Moms. It's no longer working with the Moms group. Black Lives Matter didn't like them because they felt they are simply trying to build their own value. They do turn on themselves, don't they? New York Times is noting that the site of George Floyd's death is now a no-go zone for police and a crime-infested nightmare for the local residents. It happened 2 months ago in the area where he died. According to the New York Times, a sacred space, no-go zone, more violence continues to happen in the area. Yesterday, former President Obama, made some remarks at the memorial for Congressman Lewis. He just couldn't avoid stepping into the political arena instead of just taking time to honor the civil rights leader. I'll share it with you when we continue.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
By ending some of the partisan gerrymandering so that all voters have the power to choose their politicians, not the other way around. And if all this takes eliminating the filibuster, another Jim Crow relic, in order to secure the God-given rights of every American, then that's what we should do.
That is former President Barack Obama at the memorial service yesterday for Congressman Lewis, John Lewis, in his passing. Civil rights icon. Now, when we were on the air yesterday, I couldn't really watch all of Obama's remarks. I saw the opening remarks, and I relayed them, you know, again, offering praise to the civil rights leader. But then deeper into the content, apparently Obama decided to go full mode campaign and turn the memorial service into a political event. Now, former Presidents Clinton and Bush 43 were also there, and they made comments, but they didn't venture into anything like politics. Here you got Obama suddenly bringing up, with the casket of John Lewis in front of him, bringing up filibusters, Senate actions, things of this nature. I didn't like it at all. And Tucker Carlson of Fox News certainly didn't either. I don't like exactly what Tucker said either. I'll tell you that now. But here's Tucker Carlson's response to Obama making those remarks at a memorial service.
Imagine if some greasy politician showed up at your loved one's funeral and started throwing around stupid partisan talking points about Senate procedure. Can you imagine that? You would be shocked if that happened. You'd probably walk out. Desecrating a funeral with campaign slogans? What kind of person would do that? But Democrats in the audience didn't seem offended. They didn't blink. They cheered. It all seemed normal to them. And why wouldn't it? Political power is their religion. It's not out of place in a church. It's what they worship. People who will politicize a funeral will do anything.
The words of Tucker Carlson. And it was a funeral, not just a memorial service. I take exception with Tucker Carlson stating, imagine if some greasy politician showed up. He's referring to Obama. I do not like that choice of words. But his point is excellent. That's not the place to be doing that at the funeral. But to those there, they loved it. You could hear them agreeing with it. And as Tucker Carlson said, political power is their religion. It's not out of place in their view. Now, yesterday also we had the death and the passing of Herman Cain, Republican, one-time presidential candidate, good friend of President Trump, and served on the Black Voices Gathering for Trump, co-chair of the board. And President Trump made a remark about talking about Herman Cain, which Don Lemon Fruitcake of CNN took a look at, saying this is Trump trying to politicize and make points off of Cain's death. So I'm going to share it with you. I try to give you both sides. He said, we began talking, this Lemon Fruitcake saying, here's Trump talking about the death toll from the coronavirus, passing 152,000 while mourning Herman Cain, who died of the virus, and he just couldn't resist lobbing a slur at China, saying that it was a China virus. All right, now you got both sides of that story debate over who said what and how. Oh, one other thing. Nancy Pelosi was there at the John Lewis funeral, and she praised nonviolence. Good, I'm for that. She praised nonviolence, said, that's what we should have is nonviolence. Nancy, I agree with you. And by the way, I'd mentioned the opening monologue. I got a letter from Nancy yesterday. I've got it here in front of me. I'm going to open it later in today's program. I cannot wait to open and see the letter that she sent me. Coming up next, though, censorship.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Censorship and political correctness. They've been used to hit us over the head over and over again, that things that were considered normal, were considered acceptable, are no longer there, no longer acceptable. And in some cases, maybe valid points have been made, and maybe it's a time for a new reckoning and a review and a reconsideration. And of course, if you start down that, it becomes a very, very slippery slope. But it's also not even even-handed. Of course it's not, because the left, the mob, will determine what's really politically correct and where you need to be censored and where others don't need to be censored. Let me give you a quick point here. The Dallas football team members, after six police officers were gunned down in Dallas while they were protecting a Black Lives Matter march a few years ago, remember that? And the players wanted to put decals on their helmets honoring the Dallas Police Department. NFL said, nope, nope, no, no, no. We're not going to use our platform for anything like that. That was before, of course, Colin Kaepernick took his knee. I'll take it back. It might have been after that. It really makes no difference. They were not going to allow anything on the uniform. And by the way, look at what's happening in pro sports right now. I'm going to spend more time on that in the next hour. In fact, we'll be joined by James Herson from L.A. He wrote an article titled, basically, The Day Baseball Died. Oh, and I mentioned in the opening monologue, what if I told you the NFL was trying to ban players from going to church? All right, I've got a lot of different roads I could go down. Let me choose this road. Let's begin with this one. Donald Trump Jr., you know, the other day had tweeted out some of the remarks and some of the video that was coming out of D.C. as the doctors in white coats held their little news gathering talking about the values of hydroxychloroquine. Mainstream leftists did not like it whatsoever. And the Twitter account of Donald Trump Jr. got locked down for 12 hours, restricted because of what he had done. And all he did was retweet what was going on. He didn't even voice an opinion. He said, you just need to look at this. That's just too much. That's just going too far. So let's go to another issue with Twitter, for instance. President Trump, on May 29th, had put out on a tweet, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts." That was about the George Floyd riots. Twitter quickly labeled that violated Twitter's rules about glorifying violence. Keep that in mind. Glorifying violence. June 23, President Trump said there will never be an autonomous zone in Washington. And, quote, "If they try, they will be met with serious force." Again, Twitter put up a warning saying it violated Twitter's rules about abusive behavior, especially the presence of a threat of harm against an identifiable group. Put that in contrast to what's happened with Twitter letting remarks of the Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini call for the destruction of Israel, for genocide, to destroy the nation and the people. You think that doesn't qualify as hate speech? You don't think that glorifies violence? You don't think that amounts to abusive behavior? So when Israel's Knesset questioned that and went to Twitter's regional director saying, "Why are you allowing this to happen? You shut down things like Trump Jr. just saying, look at this," and then Trump's remarks, President Trump's remarks, "and yet you let the Ayatollah put up things like this calling for the destruction of Israel and genocide and wiping them off the map." You know what the response was from Twitter? "We have an approach toward leaders that says direct interactions with fellow public figures, comments on political issues of the day, are foreign policy saber rattling on military economic issues are generally not in violation of our rules." Break that down. "We have an approach toward leaders," that would include President Trump, would it not? "That direct interactions with fellow public figures, comments on political issues of the day," which I just read the ones from Trump about, if they try to set up an autonomous zone here, they'll be met with serious force. That's an event of the day. "And when the looting starts, the shooting starts," that's also an event of the day. But you could talk about wiping out an entire nation, and that's acceptable to Twitter. Did that not tell you the whole mindset? All right, I'd mentioned that the NFL declaring that players cannot go to church. Here's exactly what's happened. There's a deal. This is a written piece by appearing in the Federalist by L. Reynolds, saying a deal has been reached by the National Football League and the NFL Players Association that bans players from attending any indoor church services that are above 25% capacity. And those sources are apparently telling that to NBC Sports. So NBC Sports apparently is also aware of it. And alongside the restrictions on attending worship services, the collective bargaining agreement between the players and the league prohibits players from attending indoor nightclubs and bars, indoor concerts, professional sports games, indoor parties that include 15 or more. This deal has still not been made public. NBC Sports apparently making no mention on any restrictions on this next thing I'm going to tell you. Because Twitter has been filled with pictures of professional football players, members of the Jaguars and others showing up at some of the Black Lives Matter events and protests, sometimes with masks, sometimes with not. That's being overlooked. That's being accepted by the National Football League, apparently. Now, if the players violate the rules as laid out by the NFL, NBC Sports is speculating teams might rely on contacts within the community to let the NFL know when violations are witnessed. In other words, tip lines. Let us know if you see a player at a nightclub or a protest. A protest, we're going to let them kind of go, I guess. If it's a nightclub, well, we'll probably look at it. And heaven forbid if they're in church. And Twitter is really upsetting a Washington Post reporter. This Washington Post reporter says, "I'm just trying to do my job, and everybody keeps attacking me on Twitter. I'm fed up with it." Oh, I'm serious. This Washington Post White House reporter, Seonmin Kim, she said, "I have had enough of media critics on Twitter and told them to just stop telling reporters how to do their jobs." Here's her statement in her tweet. "All of you on Twitter screaming at reporters on how to do our jobs, just stop." well, we can't complain about your reporting and say you're not doing it. You need to do it better. That didn't work with a lot of folks when they started responding. And why would people, one of them saying, why would people ever question how you do your job? And immediately referring to the Washington Post $250 million suit they settled with Covington teenager Nick Sandeman. Remember the kid, the teenager that was standing there as a Native Indian stood there in front of him banging a drum, and the kid just stood there smiling with a MAGA hat on, and the mainstream media made it look like the kid was agitating and in the face of the American Indian, and it was the other way around. And then someone else tweeted, I've been hearing this for 15 years, ever since bloggers built a large enough audience to force journalists for the first time to hear public critiques. But this Washington Post reporter, all of you on Twitter screaming at reporters on how to do our jobs, just stop. Just stop. We can't take it anymore. Oh, my God. It's laughable, and yet it's not, isn't it? Of how bad things have gotten. There's a monument that's being vandalized in California. Now, you're trying to think, what would possibly be in California? I mean, do they have any Confederate generals in California? Not likely. Is it a monument of Donald Trump in California? Are you kidding me? In California? Give me a break. Is it a monument honoring police? Again, in California, you think they have many of those? But this particular monument has now been hit by graffiti artists. This is not a statue or anything like that of Washington even, or Lincoln, or even, as I said, any Confederate members past. Any slave owners, anybody like that. This is a monument that's at Chapman University in California, in Orange County. I want to take a break now, and when I come back, I'll tell you exactly what that monument is, and you tell me if things haven't gone too far. Oh, and here's something else. Andrew in Chicago sent this to me. I had not had a chance to see it. Thanks, Andrew. CNN posting a remarks by the American Cancer Society. Please listen. Individuals with a cervix are now recommended to start cervical cancer screenings at 25 and continue through age 65. The important lines are individuals with a cervix. Andrew says, CNN can't say women anymore? What individuals have a cervix? Do you know anything about biology? And they won't write women are now recommended to start cervical cancer? Oh, I'm not done. Please stand by.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad. So be wise and keep on reading the signs of my body.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
In 1998, they had a memorial placed at Chapman University. And recently, it's been defaced. Brown paint covering up historical writings on this memorial. The writings talked about those looking for freedom. This monument is a part of the Berlin Wall that came down. And they decided to put that up as a reminder to everyone. A symbol of the end of the Cold War, a symbol of freedom. And, of course, a lot of students going there, even professors, were kids when the wall came down. One of the professors said, I remember Ronald Reagan standing at this wall saying, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. And now a piece of it's sitting in our backyard. And now it's being vandalized? Of course, we call it the Berlin Wall, but the communists called it anti-fascist protection rampart. RedState.com, yes, a conservative organization, pointed out that that narrative was to protect the people of East Berlin from the fascist Western capitalism on the other side. But what it was really doing is trapping them in a communist disaster, not letting them leave, and 80 died trying to get across that wall. 80 trying to escape to freedom, and they died. And now you've got Antifa and other vandals deciding, let's deface this Berlin Wall Memorial in California. They don't know history. They don't really care about history. Or they do know it, and they think, you know what? That was a anti-fascist thing, so we're going to also deface it as well. But 80 died trying to get across that wall. And when they took a section of that wall and put it on display to mark that historic event, the end of the Cold War and what had happened at Chapman University, and nowadays, we don't like it so much. I wonder about those that lost loved ones trying to escape East Berlin to get to the West. You remember that barrier against it? They had the wall, they had the barricades up there, they had German snipers ready to shoot anyone, I should say communist snipers ready to shoot anyone trying to go across the wall, and they got into a dead man's zone. They would be shot dead before they even reached the wall. All right, well, COVID-19, of course, is still with us, and as I said earlier, Dr. Fauci is testifying today in Congress and says, There is no doubt that President Trump's order and quick decision to stop flights from Europe and China has saved thousands of lives. I wonder how much you'll hear that on the mainstream media. And, of course, one of the things that we never really thought about and when this thing broke out is that if all the businesses were being shut down and we're all told to stay home, and suddenly you realize, hey, we don't need more toilet paper. We got everybody living here. Everybody's here and they're not going out anywhere. They don't have an office to go to, or they're not going out anywhere to some other restroom. And suddenly, what did you have? You had a toilet paper shortage, didn't you? All right, now just when you thought it was safe to go to the can, now that you got toilet paper, you might not have a can. Well, let me correct that for you. Let me clarify this. We've had the great toilet paper shortage. Now we're supposedly having, I've got probably another 60 rolls stashed away. I'm not going to tell you where. I mean, this is like Bitcoin, only might call it Buttcoin. I mean, this is valuable stuff. But now, in addition to that, you might have seen signs at various places you go into and say they need exact change or a credit card. They don't have enough change. So the Federal Reserve said, okay, now we need to get more money, coins printed up. So they're trying to do that. They had toilet paper. Now the shortage of coins. I mean, I don't know what they're doing with all the coins in COVID, but they're doing it. But the other thing is, I mentioned that it's safe to go to the can, but you might not have a can. Well, you might not have a can to hold in your, well, not an aluminum can. Manufacturing industry says the aluminum beverage can is suddenly extremely in short supply. Many new beverages coming into market in cans, and other longstanding customers moving away from plastic bottles because of environmental concerns about plastic pollution. They like the portability and storability of cans, so now there's a shortage of cans. And yet all of this, these really are first world class problems, wouldn't you agree? You imagine somewhere in the Congo that they have a real concern about coins or aluminum cans or toilet paper, but be thankful for what you have. Coming up the next hour, we will once again wade into the Ferguson Michael Brown shooting. and a new review of the case, and folks are not happy with it already. And there's an execution date set for the only Native American on death row. And, of course, that's going to be a cause celeb also. And what's happened to pro sports? All pro sports. James Herson will join us from Hollywood with his thoughts. And my Pelosi letter. I'll open my Pelosi letter and share it with you. I cannot wait.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.